He shouldn't be surprised. After all, everything that had to do with Derek Hawkins was fleeting, as though he only existed when in the presence of others. Perhaps that was true of the painting as well. Perhaps it only existed when viewed by all London. She laughed, high-pitched and panicked, and Alec turned.
What?
That's when he noticed the room.
Where is everything?
She shook her head. Gone.
Gone where?
She turned to him. I don't know. It was here. She pointed to the wall, where windows received brilliant southern light throughout the day. The painting was right there. He scowled.
You posed here.
She ignored the question, instead repeating one of his earlier ones. Where is everything? She giggled, the sound high and unsettling and panicked. Where did it go? Alec crossed to her.
Lily, he said quietly, we'll find it. There are a finite amount of places where he could have hidden it.
There are 100 places, she said. 1,000. Frustration grew, tightening in her chest. This is not a Scottish keep, Alec. It is London. She paused, looked at him. Do you believe in fate?
No.
She smiled, small and sad. I do. This was my only chance, my opportunity to save myself. Perhaps, though, perhaps my disgrace is fated.
It's not.
She didn't reply, turning back to the room to whisper to the empty walls. I wanted to find it. For the first time in 3 weeks, one day, she'd had hope that her life might be hers once more, that she might survive. She looked to him. I begged you to let me run, to let me end it my way. And then you gave me hope, and I thought this was the answer.
It is, he said,
his gaze firm and full of something akin to pride.
Clever girl. It is. We will find it. Anywhere in London. Running is not the answer. This is.
And, God save her, she almost believed him. His sure certainty, as though all he had to do was will it so and it was done. She almost believed him. I thought it would be here.
And if it were mine, I would keep it here.
The reply came without hesitation. She looked up, meeting his eyes, whiskey in the golden candlelight. What does that mean? He looked away, as though he'd been caught confessing something he should not have.
Only that I would keep it close.
If it were your best hope of a legacy, you mean?
No,
he said softly.
That's not what I mean.
She caught her breath at the words, the way they thickened the air around them. What, then? He was so close now, close enough to touch, and Lily was consumed with the keen memory of 2 nights prior, in the carriage, of touching him, of him touching her. She shouldn't do it, not here, not ever. And still she lifted a hand, feeling the tremors in it as she set it to his chest, feeling his heart beating strong and fast beneath the swath of tartan that crossed his shoulder. Time stopped. They both stared at that place where her pale hand rested against the red of his plaid. He was so strong, so warm. Her gaze lifted to find his gaze on hers, waiting for her. Quiet and strong and patient, as though it were his whole purpose, to wait for her, to be with her, to be hers. Her lips parted at the thought, and his attention flickered to the movement, the dark and silence cloaking them in each other. She lifted her chin, offering herself to him. He dipped his head, closing the distance between them. Yes, please, she would give anything for him. Her eyes slid shut.
Lily,
he whispered, the word a kiss of breath against her lips, filled with devastation and desire. Yes, and then he released her, cleared his throat.
We should leave before he returns.
Like that, it was over, and the room spun with the speed of his departure. She pressed her fingers to her lips, wishing she could will away the ache there, the wanting. He wanted to kiss her. She'd seen it. Why hadn't he done it? Was it Derek? Was it her past? Was he too reminded of what she had done here? Of who she had become here? Regret came, harsh and painful, and Lily stiffened, hating it, hating all of it. Every minute that had led her to this moment, in the room where she'd laid herself bare for one man and ached for another. With no choice, she followed Alec back into the bedchamber, attempting to appear as unmoved by the moment as he was. What if he's left, absconded with it? Alec ripped open the doors to the massive wardrobe in the corner, revealing a sea of clothing in silks and satins and wools and linens, every colour imaginable.
I assume he is not gone.
She shook her head, drawing nearer. Derek would never leave his clothes behind. He looked to her.
He's a peacock, you know.
I know, she said, reaching for a turquoise vest brocaded in gold thread. But peacocks can be very compelling. A low rumble sounded from his chest, followed by a distinctly grumpy.
Compelling is not the same as worthwhile.
Her fingers stilled on the shimmering blue fabric. Scotsmen are the latter, I suppose. Later, she would wonder why on earth she thought the words appropriate, where on earth the words had come from. But in the moment, as they stood in the dark, her past and future colliding in disappointment and frustration and doom, she didn't care. He looked at her, the silence of the house cacophonous between them. He cleared his throat, and Lily heard the nervous catch there.
More worthwhile than he is.
More compelling as well. She closed the wardrobe doors and turned, pressing her back to them, staring up at Alec towering above her. Why did you leave me? His brow furrowed.
I'm here.
You left me here as well. She shook her head. This afternoon, with Stanhope.
You told me to leave you.
Had she? She supposed she had. But then... She shook her head. But you didn't leave me. You saved me. And then you left me. He was silent for a long moment, and she would have given anything to know what he was thinking. Finally, he said,
You were well, and Stanhope was there.
It was what she had expected, a quick, perfunctory answer. But it wasn't true, and she knew it. She shook her head. But why did you leave me?
Because...
He trailed off, and silence stretched between them for an eternity before he added,
Because you deserve someone like him.
I don't want someone like him, she said.
Why the hell not? Stanhope is a damn prince among men.
He's very kind, she said.
Is that a problem? He sputtered. Kind, handsome, titled, and charming. The holy trinity of qualities.
She smiled. That's four qualities. He narrowed his gaze on her.
What is wrong with you, Lily? You could have him. He knows about the painting and doesn't mind. Indeed, he seemed only to enjoy your company.
She should want Frederick, Lord Stanhope. She should sink to her knees and thank the stars that he was willing to have her. And yet, she didn't. She was too busy wanting another. Impossibly so. Not that she could tell him that. We've known each other for 2 hours. He couldn't possibly desire me.
Any man in his right mind would desire you after 2 minutes.
She blinked. He shut his mouth. What did you say?
Nothing. We must go.
I'm a scandal.
You're the very best kind of scandal,
he grumbled as he headed for the door to the room. At least that's what she thought he said. I didn't hear you.
You're the very worst kind of scandal, he said louder.
That wasn't what he had said. She couldn't keep her smile from her face. What does that mean?
You're the kind of scandal a man wants to claim for his own.
She gaped at him. She'd never in her life heard something so romantic, and she certainly hadn't expected it to come from the mouth of this massive, moody Scot. That's very kind, she said.
There's nothing kind about it, he said.
There is, though, she said. Derek didn't want me at all. And that was before I was a scandal.
Hawkins was an idiot, he said,
more sound than words. He was stopped now, at the closed door to the room, one hand splayed wide against the mahogany. She was transfixed by that hand, by its ridges and valleys, by the scar that ran an inch below his first knuckle, stark white against the brown of his skin. What happened to your hand? He did not move.
I met with the jagged end of a broken bottle.
How?
My father was an angry drunk.
Lily winced, wanting to go to him. Instead, she said, I'm sorry. Still, he did not look at her.
Don't be. I left the day after he did this.
I'm sorry no one was there to care for you. The fingers flexed against the wood, the only indication that he heard her.
We should leave.
Do you think someone will want me? She asked that hand, knowing she shouldn't, knowing that the question revealed far too much of what she wanted. He pressed his forehead to the door and spoke in low, growling Gaelic before switching to English.
Yes, Lillian, I think someone will want you.
She stopped herself. She couldn't ask him, no matter how much she liked the idea.
Don't ask me, he whispered,
and the sound made her ache. He couldn't. He didn't like her. He never seemed to like her, that was. He seemed to view her as nothing but trouble. Didn't he? She could not bear it. Do you want me? He did not swear in Gaelic that time. He swore in fast, wicked English. Don't answer, she said immediately, at once terrified he might and desperate for him to. He did not lift his head from its place against the door.
I'm to protect you. I'm to protect you.
He said it like a litany for himself, for God, not for her.
I'm to protect you.
Don't answer, she repeated, ignoring the pang of rich desire coursing through her. It was simply that in the moment she'd wished him to, quite desperately. Because if Alec wanted her, she might have a chance at the life of which she'd once dreamed, with a man far more noble than she'd ever imagined.
I'm to protect you.
And perhaps it was that she'd spent so much of her life alone, but the idea of being protected, of being partnered with someone who wished for her safety as she wished for his, was the most tempting thing she'd ever experienced. But he'd left her, after all, ridden away as though they were nothing to each other. And perhaps they weren't. She'd never been very good at understanding what she was to others, or what they were to her, for that matter. She nodded once, desperate to put the whole conversation behind her. I understand. The answer is no. I should never have asked. There was a long moment when she thought he might reply, thought he might turn his head, look at her. Tell me you want me, she willed him. Tell me this, us, it could be. He didn't. Instead, he let out a long, ragged breath, and that hand that transfixed her balled into a fist. He pressed it against the door, his knuckles going stark white, the tendons in his arms straining. And then he spoke.
No, he said. You shouldn't have.
He opened the door with a force that would have ripped it from the hinge if it were locked, as the studio door had been, and he disappeared into the darkness. Chapter 15. Diluted Duke deserts woeful ward. He deserved a medal. For saying no. For not turning to her, taking her, making love to her until his hands stopped shaking with need. For not ruining her thoroughly, there in the darkness, on the floor of Derek Hawkins's bare bedroom. Do you want me? He wanted her like the Highlands wanted mist. But he would be damned if he was going to take what he wanted and destroy the possibility of her getting what she deserved. A life with a man who was worthy of her. He'd thought it before he'd discovered her plans to steal the painting back, but once he'd committed to helping her, to finding the portrait and destroying it before it could be brought to light, his conviction was redoubled. He would find the thing, and he would protect her, damn it.
I'm to protect you.
How had he gathered the strength to leave her, not to turn to her? He'd heard it in her breath, the truth, the fact that she would give in to him, that she wished to, that she wanted him again, that she wanted more. More. He'd thought he'd known what wanting felt like, what longing meant. And then he'd met Lillian Hargrove and he'd realized the truth, that everything for which he'd ever hungered was nothing compared to her. There was nothing he would not pay, nothing he would not do for another taste of her, and that he was unworthy of her. And as she'd stood in that empty house, in that empty room, where she'd once been nude for another man, he'd been willing to pay, to do, and he'd resisted, to protect her, to give her a chance at the life she desired. Because now she had a chance for more than a marriage of convenience. Now, if they could find the painting, if they could steal it, she might still be ruined in the eyes of London, but she could avoid ruination in the eyes of the world. Clever girl. He should have thought of it himself. Would have, if he wasn't so blinded by her beauty, by her strength, by everything about her. But he'd been too busy protecting her. From London, from her future, from her past. From himself. Yes, he deserved a damn medal. When they'd left, it had begun to rain in earnest, and he'd continued to do the best thing for her, stuffing her into a hack and climbing onto the block next to the driver, for her own safety. Or for his. He wasn't certain what he would do if he ended up inside the carriage with her, next to her, sharing her space, breathing her air, smelling her, somehow like heather and highlands. The rain stung his face as the carriage careened around corners, returning her to the safety of Grosvenor Square, where they would lie in their beds, separated by walls adorned with dogs, and he would pretend to sleep, aching to go to her, to strip her bare and worship her with his hands and lips and tongue. The thought had him growling in the cold May rain, recalling her taste, recalling the peaks and valleys of her body and imagining how her most secret places would feel against his tongue.
Problem, my lord.
Of course there was a problem. He wanted Lily with a raging intensity, and she was not his to want.
Stop the carriage up here, he said,
digging deep in his pocket to pay the driver.
Where are we?
Hanover Square.
I shall walk from here.
Sir, it rains. As though he hadn't noticed.
Take your passenger to Grosvenor Square.
His fingers brushed a piece of écru in his coat pocket, and he extracted it along with his purse, looked down at it in the light bouncing about from the hack lantern. Countess Rowley, Peg's calling card. His unknown valet must have transferred it from his shredded coat to this one. He paid the driver his exorbitant sum, received his obsequious accolades, and climbed down from the carriage as the door opened from the inside.
Don't let me see you, he willed her.
He didn't know that he would be able to resist her again. And at the same time,
let me see you.
Alec, his name on her lips, a gift in the rain.
Close the door, he said,
refusing to look, not trusting himself to see. A pause, then. It is raining. You should ride inside, near her, touching her. He could not help the huff of frustration that came at the words. He should not ride inside. He should not be near her. He had a single task, to protect her. And he was the most dangerous thing in her world right now.
The hack will return you home.
What of you? Who shall return you home? The soft question threatened to slay him. The idea of a home they shared, the impossibility of it.
I shall walk.
Alec, she began, stopping herself. Please. At the word, the one she had whispered so much while in his arms, the one that promised so much and asked for so much more than he was able to give. His hands began to shake again, just as they had in Hawkins's house. He clenched them, willing away his desire. Would he ever not want her?
Close the door, Lily.
She had no choice but to follow the order when he looked up to the driver.
Drive on.
The carriage was instantly in motion. He rubbed a hand over his face, loathing London, wishing he were anywhere but here.
England will be your ruin.
Removing his hand, he looked down at the card, at the direction beneath the name, Hanover Square. Come and see me, Peg had whispered when she'd slipped the card into his coat pocket. Earlier, Lily had asked him if he believed in fate, and he'd answered truthfully. Fate did not put him here in Hanover Square with Peg's calling card. A too skilled valet and a too frustrating ward had done it. And as he watched the carriage disappear into the darkness, the sound of horses' hooves and clattering wheels masked by the rain, it was not fate that sent him to the door of number 12 Hanover Square. Come and see me. It was his own shame. He waited for no time before a maid arrived in the foyer to escort him into the depths of the house, up a back stairway and to a room that he identified before the door even opened. Peg's bedchamber. And she, within, standing by the fireplace, blonde hair glittering gold in the light, as gold as a silk nightgown she wore, low and clinging to the curves he had worshipped a lifetime ago, thinking they would be the first and last he would ever worship, thinking she would wish him to worship them forever. I knew you would come, she whispered, low and secret, as though the maid weren't there. And then the girl wasn't there, disappeared into the hallway and closing the door behind her with a soft snick.
I did not, he said.
She smiled, that knowing smile from 2 decades earlier, the one that made promises she would never keep. You underestimated my irresistibility, and you wore your kilt, you glorious thing. She moved to the bed, lying back against the pillows, arranging herself in a way so casual that it could only have been practiced. And it was. He had, after all, seen her in just such a position before, in a different place, in a different world, when he'd been young and green and desperate for her beauty, for her perfection. And it had ended differently than tonight would. Because then he had been even more desperate for what she represented, for a future he would never have, for acceptance by her world, for England. Now he wanted none of those things. Now all he wanted was Lily. And he was here to remind himself that she was not for him, that every time he touched her, he soiled her with his past and his shame.
I am not here for you, he said coolly.
A sleek blonde brow arched. Are you sure?
Thoroughly.
She sighed and leaned back, unmoved by the pronouncement. You waste my time then, darling. Why are you here? Why, indeed? What did he want from this moment? When had Peg ever given him what he wanted? She did not wait for him to arrive at his answer, instead saying, If you are not here to play, then you should return home to your little scandal. He snapped his attention to her.
What does that mean?
Only that you made it quite clear at Eversley's ball that you were willing to do anything for the girl, even make a scene. And I know you learned your lesson about scene-making years ago. She paused, then said, I confess, had I known that Alex Stewart, without family or funds, was to be a duke with a king's fortune, I might have reconsidered your very sweet offer. They all would have. And he would have had a different life, one that had not included a long line of women who thought him worthy of play but not pride. Peg smiled, cold and ugly. It occurred to him that she might imagine herself beautiful, that he had once imagined her so. Now, however, he knew what beauty could be, how it might come with strength and pride and purpose and eyes the colour of the Scottish sea. She spoke again. Would it help to hear that yours was my prettiest proposal? I still recall it. I shall do right by you. We shall spend the rest of our days happy. She tutted. Young and green and utterly unknowing of women and the world. For a heartbeat, he was 15 again, an idiot boy.
I learned my lessons of women years ago.
There were those whom he deserved and those he did not. And of course, the one he wanted more than anything fell into the latter category. Peg underscored the thought. And we ladies learned our lessons about you, did we not? This was it, the reason he'd come, the reminder of his station, of the life he could never have. And still he resisted it.
You know nothing about me.
One side of Peg's mouth raised in a wry, knowing smile. I know more than she does, I'd wager. A pause. Or has she already ridden the Scottish brute? He narrowed his gaze before he could stop himself, unable to deny the shame and fury coursing through him, unable to hide the truth from Peg. Peg's lips formed a perfect pout. Oh, darling, still as sweet as ever. You care for the girl.
No, he said.
Liar. The tut again, followed by movement as she came off the bed toward him, the gold silk slithering against her like skin. You forget, Alex Stewart, I was the first woman you loved.
I never loved you, he said,
refusing to move as she came close, refusing to flinch as she reached up and put her cool hand to his face, erasing the lingering memory of Lily's. He supposed he deserved it. That's not what you said then, she said quietly. Sweet-faced Scottish Alec, big as a house, like nothing I'd ever seen, like nothing I'd ever felt. She pressed herself to him, and he resisted the urge to push her away, wanting the lesson, wanting the reminder of who he'd been, of what he'd been. She lowered her voice to a whisper, her hand reaching to the hem of his kilt, fingertips grazing his thigh, making him cringe. Let the girl have it, darling. Let her feel it. You shan't be her first, but neither will she be yours. Think on it. You are well suited. He wanted to roar his fury at the way she said it, as though he were anything close to Lily. And then Peg added, And when she's had enough of you, come back to me. I would dearly love another go.
Never,
she pressed close. Not even if I remind you of my tremendous performance.
Odd that you describe it as such, as I find I lack interest in an encore.
Peg's hand flew, sharp and angry, the crack sounding an alarm in the quiet room. He did not lift his hand to ease the sting of the blow, instead reveling in the sensation, in the message of it, in the reminder it delivered. Do not get above yourself, Alex Stewart. You may be the diluted Duke now, she said. But there was a time when you existed because of my benevolence. You would not like it if the world knew the truth.
I don't give a horse's ass if this world knows the truth, he said. Remember, Lady Rowley, my secrets belong to you as well. Be sure to tell your friends. No lady likes her underthings aired.
She scowled. You are an underthing. He had her.
At some point, our past had to be a boon, no?
There was a long silence, and then she said, My secrets or not, you would not like it if your lovely Lily knew the truth about you. I would watch my tongue if I were you. Peg was wrong. He would be grateful for Lily to know the truth. It would make wanting her easier, because it would make having her impossible. Nevertheless, he should not have come. Outside the house, he had wondered why he was calling on Peg, why he allowed her calling card to summon him. Now he knew the truth. He wanted her, the reminder she served, the proof that Lily's perfection was not for him. He left the house resolved to two things. First, Lily would have happiness in the hands of the best man they could find, and second, that man would never be him. Despite having stared into the ribbon case inside Madame Herbert's modiste shop on Bond Street for the last quarter of an hour, Lily could not have named a single colour inside. She was too consumed with the admonition that had repeated itself again and again for the nearly 3 days since she had last seen Alec. She should not have asked him if he wanted her. She should not have betrayed the insidious thought that had taken root in her mind, the product of protective actions and provocative kisses, and a thread of hope that she should have known better than to allow access to her thoughts, to her heart. And still, like a simpering imbecile, she had asked him. Do you want me? Her cheeks flamed at the memory. How could she have possibly imagined it would result in anything but embarrassment? She had seen him struggle with the answer, as though he hadn't wanted to hurt her, to tell her the truth. Despite that, he'd told her, because he was nobler than other men, better and nobler. He'd said no. Better and nobler and not for her. not even as she wanted him quite desperately. And then, as if telling her the truth had not been enough, he disappeared. She'd waited for his return 3 nights earlier, ultimately falling asleep in the receiving room at Doghouse, not wishing to miss him. He had not returned, nor had he returned the day after, nor the day after that. He'd even taken the dogs, which she had to believe meant he had no intention of returning, no matter how much she wished for it. And so this morning, Lily had taken matters into her own hands and called in reinforcements. "Aren't you happy that we decided to take on the mantle of chaperone?" She looked up from the ribbon case to find Lady Cecily Talbot on the opposite side, grinning widely. "We're near to fairy godmothers with all of our hard work and dedication." In the corner, Celeste and Celine lingered over a collection of hairpins and accessories that some would call de rigueur and others would call de trop. They giggled at something in the pile, and Lily wondered what it must be like to have such little about which to worry. They were married, or nearly so, to men who were rumoured to adore them, and so they lived without hesitation, without loneliness, always part of an us. Lily felt a keen spear of jealousy as she watched them, imagining how her life might have been different, if only her father hadn't died. The Duke followed suit, and the others, like little toy soldiers, all in a row. Perhaps she would not have been alone on Michaelmas. Perhaps she never would have met Derek, never sat for the painting, never met Alec. She inhaled sharply at the thought, rejecting it instantly. She would not trade meeting Alec, not even if she had driven him away, not even if she never saw him again. "Dear Lily," Cecily said, breaking into her thoughts, more than welcome to do so. "Would you like to tell us why we are here?"
"I have found it. We attend Hawkins's performance tomorrow, with Stanhope. You require a gown, no dogs."
The missive had arrived, along with directions to a modiste shop on Bond Street that morning, unsigned. It had not required signing. And still she wished for it, some kind of personal acknowledgement. What would he have chosen? Alec? His initials? His title? Not the last, certainly. She was disgusting herself. He'd invited another man to join them. If that weren't enough to prove her simpering was cabbage-headed, she did not know what was. She looked to Cecily, trying for brightness. "I require a gown." Cecily raised a brow. "And the bit where you look as though you are a lad missing his favourite pup?" She shook her head. "I don't know what you mean." "Because we are friends, I shall be patient and wait for you to tell me." Friends. The unexpected word, one that Cecily used so quickly, as though friendship were natural and honest for her, as though it could be for Lily. The ache in Lily's chest grew more insistent.
"My ladies!"
Madame Hébert, widely believed to be the best dressmaker in all of London, the scandal sheets claimed that she was rescued from Josephine's court at the height of the wars, stepped through a nearby set of curtains.
"It is a pleasure to see my favourite sisters again."
She looked to Lily.
"No, not only sisters, 3 under new face."
She drew closer, setting a hand to Lily's jaw, turning it left, then right.
"You might be the most beautiful woman I have ever had in my shop."
It was not a compliment, but instead stated as fact. Lily blinked.
"Thank you."
"This is Lillian Hargrove," Cecily interjected. "Ward to the Duke of Warwick." One perfect black brow rose, the only indication that the modiste heard the words.
"Or simply Lily," Lily replied.
The dressmaker nodded.
"You are here for Warwick."
If wishing made it so, she pushed the thought aside.
"No."
"For another," Celeste interjected with glee.
"Earl Stanhope."
Except she wasn't, not really. Madame Hébert did not look away from Lily.
"I heard you wore a dog dress to the Eversley ball."
"You did?" The Frenchwoman narrowed her gaze.
"It is true."
"I was trying to prove a point," Lily said, suddenly even more embarrassed than she was the night of the ball.
"To Stanhope?"
She straightened her shoulders. "To Warwick." There was a long moment while the dressmaker considered the words, and then,
"Oui, I shall dress you."
"Oh, excellent." The trio of sisters clapped their hands excitedly.
She's obviously going to need everything. Not everything, Lily corrected. Only a dress for... Madame Hébert was already moving, pushing through the curtains as though Lily would simply follow. And she did, the Talbot sisters nearly carrying her along. She does not dress just anyone, Celine whispered. She's very particular. You'd think if she were particular, she'd avoid the scandal, Lily whispered back. Do you think she knows about me? They entered the workspace and fitting rooms of the dress shop, revealing several seamstresses sewing beneath windows along the far wall, along with a woman poised on a raised platform, back to the door, young woman at her feet, pinning the hem of a lush amethyst silk.
I never avoid the scandal, Hébert replied, as though she'd been a part of the conversation all along. It's scandals who are seen, and I like my clothing to be seen.
She turned to face Lily, indicating a platform nearby.
I would have avoided you before you were a scandal, lovely Lily, when you were lonely, Lily.
I do adore Hébert. Cecily sank onto a nearby chaise and repeated herself to the older woman.
She's going to need everything.
The dressmaker tilted her head, considering Lily for a long moment before she said,
Oui.
No, Lily said. I only need a dress for the theatre.
Valérie!
Hébert was already turning away, summoning a younger woman nearby.
Bring me the blues!
Turning back, she said,
I've a handful of dresses that shall work for you and require minimal adjustments before tomorrow night. But as I told your Duke, the rest of the trousseau will have to come in time.
He's not my... she began the denial before the Frenchwoman's entire sentence settled.
Trousseau? One of my very favourite words, Celine sighed from her place next to her sisters on the settee nearby. The best part of marriage.
Well, the second best part, Celeste said dryly, sending her sisters into giggles.
Lily will learn about that bit, Celine replied. And with Stanhope, what a treat.
He is terribly handsome, Celeste agreed. Cecily, however, remained quiet, watching Lily carefully, through eyes that seemed far too knowing. The Earl of Stanhope is not going to marry me, Lily said, turning away to the modiste who was busy sifting through Valerie's armful of gowns, finally extracting a stunning cerulean gown. When she held it up for viewing, Lily nearly gasped at the rich colour.
It is beautiful, she said, unable to stop herself from reaching for it.
Madame Hébert nodded.
Oui, and you shall be beautiful in it.
She thrust it into Lily's hands and pointed to a dressing room. Lily did as she was told and returned within minutes, the gown a shockingly near-perfect fit for her.
Oh my, Celeste sighed. That is it, from Celine.
Cecily smiled broadly.
He shan't know what's hit him.
For a fleeting moment, the words summoned a vision of Alec, eyes narrowed to slits, hands reaching for her, just as he had in the carriage on the way home from the Eversley ball. What would she do to capture his attention again, to summon his touch, his kiss? She'd wear this dress every day for the rest of time. And then she remembered it was not for Alec, it was for another man, one she must catch in 3 days' time. The dressmaker pointed to the unattended platform, her staff swarming like beetles, immediately fussing about her, barking orders in French, pinning with wicked speed, as though she'd been born with a pincushion attached to one wrist. Lily did not speak French well enough to know what was being discussed, and so she did her best to remain still as they moved about, letting only her eyes move. From the Talbot sisters on the nearby settee to the others in the shop, seamstresses, a woman in the corner who appeared to be calculating the accounts, and the other customer, who had apparently completed her fitting and was, in that moment, exiting a dressing room. Lily's gaze widened. Countess Rowley's gaze trailed the blue gown to the floor, taking in the cut, the fall of the fabric, the hemline, before rising again to meet Lily's eyes, a knowing, unsettling glint in her own. And when she spoke, it was with all the calm of a queen.
He shall adore that.
The room quieted in the wake of the pronouncement, the only movement the subtle straightening of the trio on the chaise. Lily did not speak, too afraid to do so. The Countess did not feel similarly.
He always liked blue.
She would not rise to the bait.
Thank you, she said, deliberately returning the Countess's appraisal. I rather like blue myself. One blonde brow arched. You know he came to see me 3 evenings ago. Who does she? Celeste began. Has she been with? Celine chimed in. Cecily raised a hand, stopping them from speaking, even as she rose to her feet, as though she might save Lily from this moment. As though anyone could save Lily from this moment. 3 evenings ago, she'd asked Alec if he wanted her. 3 evenings ago, he'd said no. I don't believe you, she said. It was a lie. She did believe it. 3 evenings ago, he'd gone to this woman, this cool, unmoving, unmoved woman, the opposite of Lily, thoroughly aristocratic and filled with London perfection, and his past. And Lily had returned home and waited for him, and he had not come. The Countess saw the lie for what it was. She smiled and approached, looking every inch as though she was made for this place, this moment, looking like the kind of woman any man would want, beyond scandal, beyond shame. Jealousy shot through Lily as the Countess neared, a small, knowing smile on her lips. He came to me because he wanted the reminder that you are not for him. The word stung like a blow, hard and wicked. Lily refused to show it. She straightened, willing herself strong. If he came to you, Peg, then I assure you I am not for him. Good girl, she thought she heard one of the Talbot sisters say. Surprise warred with anger on the Countess's face. There, then gone, disappeared by that cool mask. Poor lovely Lily. Don't you see? Alec is not built for a lifetime, but instead best used for one night. Even without full understanding, the words whipped their punishment, and Lily did all she could do, turning to the modiste. Are you through, madame? Not quite, the Frenchwoman said from her place at the hem of the gown. But the Countess is. Lady Rowley was not given an opportunity to respond before the dressmaker was snapping her fingers and a collection of young women arrived to move her into the front room. Celine and Celeste released twin breaths from the settee as Cecily rushed forward. That woman is a termagant, she drew close. You handled her beautifully. I was particularly impressed by the use of her given name. The name Alec used with her. The name he'd used with her for God knew how long. He had gone to her, and he'd left Lily. She trailed off, unable to find words. She looked down at her hands to discover them shaking. She looked up to Cecily. I don't know what to do. Cecily met her gaze and took her hands, holding them tightly, keeping them still. You remain strong, and you never, ever let her see you tremble. Agreed, Celeste joined them, along with Celine. Nor him. Lily shook her head. I don't know to whom you refer. Cecily smiled at the proper words. Of course not. But if you did, she paused, know to whom we refer, that is, if you did, I assume you'd choose him over the other. Tears threatened, and Lily looked to the ceiling, willing them away, willing herself away from here, as Madame Hébert stood from her place at Lily's feet, crossing the room to a cabinet full of fabric. Lily reminded herself that Alec was not an option. He was never an option. And 2 nights past, he had made it more than clear. She looked to her friend. He does not want me. Bollocks, Cecily said. Lily shook her head. It is true. He left me alone in the house. I've not seen him in 3 days. Apparently he left me to seek comfort in the arms of... She trailed off and waved an arm in the direction of the front room of the shop. After a long moment, she added, soft and sad. Yes. Yes, of course. I choose him. It was the first time she'd admitted it aloud, and the words were terrifying and heartbreaking all at once. She wanted him more than she'd ever wanted anything. But he doesn't want me. Oh, Lily, Cecily said, climbing up onto the platform and wrapping her in an embrace. Lily had always heard that friends' embraces made one feel better, but this did not. This made her feel worse. It made her want to give herself up to the other woman, to cry and wail and leave all her sadness, all her hopelessness at Cecily's feet. But somehow, in that wanting, she discovered the truth, that it also made her feel like she was not alone.
"We've another sister, did you know that?" Cecily said,
and it took Lily a moment to catch up to the change in topic.
"Seraphina,"
Lily nodded. "Duchess of Haven." The fifth of the Soildesses, accused of trapping a duke into marriage, disappeared from London months earlier. A shadow crossed Cecily's face.
Sarah couldn't win her duke, not in the end.
Sometimes love was impossible. Lily understood that. Except it did not seem that she understood the Talbot sisters, who looked to her with new resolve.
"But your duke, you shall get him. We shall help."
It wasn't possible, of course, but it was a wonderful fantasy. Lily removed herself from the embrace, dashing away tears to discover Celeste and Celine had joined them, that she was not alone, that she was not one, but four, five. For behind the Talbot sisters stood the French modiste, London's most revered dressmaker, holding a length of fabric and watching her with a keen, knowing eye.
"If you choose him," she extended her arms, revealing the fabric. "You find him, and you wear this."
Lily's eyes went wide as she took the offering, the movement punctuated by little excited gasps from her friends. Holding the fabric in her hands, she admitted it again, her single undeniable truth. "I want him."
"Then he is yours," Cecily replied,
her words dry and full of knowledge.
"Truthfully, if that does not win him, the man cannot be won."
Chapter 16. Tartan. Tempting textile or terrible trend? Alec didn't think it possible, but the Kensington townhouse once owned by the aging Number 9 and his wife was even worse than the doghouse. Evidently, Lady 9 had been a collector of everything. In the 3 days he'd been living in the deserted townhouse off Regent Street, Settlesworth had mentioned something about a boating accident in the North Country that took Duke and Duchess Nine tragically together. Alec had been overwhelmed by tables full of miniature animals, shelves laden with porcelain statues, and glass-doored cabinets chock-full of tea sets. It occurred to him that when this particular house had been downsized to a skeleton staff, several maids had likely been kept on for the purpose of dusting the mad collection of useless items. It also occurred to him, as he entered the house in the dead of night, greeted by Angus, the dog's wild tail wagging, barely missing a low-lying table filled with little china bells, that he should have selected a different house. This was not a place for beasts, of the four- or two-legged variety. He crouched to give the dog a proper greeting.
"Good evening, friend."
Angus leaned in for a scratch, sighing his pleasure at Alec's touch.
"We've each other, at least."
He looked up, surveying the foyer.
"Where is Hardy?"
He was not entirely surprised that the second dog was missing. Hardy had spent the last 3 days sighing and wandering the house aimlessly, as though he longed for his lost love. As though she'd not imprinted herself on every part of him in the week he'd known her, she'd also ruined his dogs. It had been the most difficult thing he'd ever done, returning to the dog house that night, resigned to find a new home, where he would not threaten her future, from which he could guard her from a distance. She'd been asleep in the receiving room when he entered, the dogs at the hearth nearby. If not for the lingering scent of Peg's perfume on his plaid, he might not have been able to leave her. But he had, and he now had a miserable dog to show for it. With a sigh of his own, he stood, making his way up the central staircase to the bedroom that had been prepared for him, Angus trailing him in the darkness. Hardy would survive. He would resume his ordinary life and return to his ordinary character when they returned to Scotland. Alec could only hope he would do the same. Time grew short, and Scotland loomed like a promise, a place where he would have no memory of Lily, of her beauty, of her smile, of her strength, of all the ways he wished to love her. He shook his head at the thought, insidious and unwavering. He did not love her. He would not love her. He could not love her. He simply had to stay away from her for 3 days. 3 days. 3 days to find the painting, to destroy it, to give Lily the life she deserved. He would return her life to her, and she would choose one of her infinite futures and live her life, strong and beautiful and brilliant beyond measure. Without him. He'd spent the day with West and King, devising the most likely location for the painting prior to the exhibition, planning his movements for the following evening, when Hawkins would take the stage for all of society, and Alec would search the rear rooms of the theatre. And while he did it, while he protected her, Lily would remain in a box high above the stage and fall in love with Stanhope. He gritted his teeth at the thought. It was what was best for her. It was the way she would survive everything. The gossip, the rumours, the truth. The Earl was obviously keen on her and willing to overlook her past. The money helped, no doubt. But he seemed a decent fellow. One Lily deserved. One who might one day be worthy of her love. Unlike Alec. He exhaled harshly, turning down the hallway to what was kindly referred to as the master's suite, ignoring the long shelves of figurines and collected useless rubbish, aching for sleep. For a night unconsumed by fits of self-loathing and the nearly unbearable desire to rise and go to Lily, and fall into her arms and make love to her until the past had fallen away and the present was all there was. And she was all there was. He shook his head, reaching for the handle to his rooms, desperate to put her away from his thoughts, even as he knew he would not be able to. Even as he knew he would enter the room and strip himself bare and take to the bed, hard with the memories of her hands and mouth and mind. He pressed his forehead to the great mahogany door, shame and desire flooding him, making him desperate to turn around and head for Grosvenor Square and take her, make her his. Revel in her and damn the consequences. He willed his breath calm, his hands still. 3 days. He could stay away from her for 3 days. He opened the door, already dreading the room's cluttered decor and the small, spindly-legged bed with its flimsy canopy. Inside, candlelight spilled across the floor, warm and golden. Hardy lifted his head from his spot at the foot of the bed, tail thumping on the heavy coverlet. But Alec wasn't looking at the dog. He was looking at Lily, fast asleep at the centre of the bed in a pool of golden candlelight, wearing nothing but his plaid. A better man would leave her, close the door and find another bed, another house, another country. A better man would have the strength to protect her from himself, the greatest danger she would ever face. The man who would claim her, keep her, despite being desperately, wholly unworthy of her. He was not a better man. His hand tightened on the door handle. He had tried to be. He had wanted to be. But now, here, bearing witness to her utter perfection, he no longer had the strength for it. He ached for her. He wanted her. He wished for her. It had only ever been her. And in that moment, everything he was, everything he would ever be, was hers. And tonight, perhaps, he could fool himself into believing that she was his. He looked to Hardy, pointed to the hallway.
Out!
The dog followed the order instantly. Alec closed the door, already heading for her. He stopped at the bedside, looking down at her as she slept, her hair a pool of auburn fire against the crisp linen. The bed was not too small. It was the perfect size for her, a fairy queen in her bower. She moved, one bare shoulder peeking out from the red tartan, pink and perfect and calling to him. He could not help himself. He groaned. She opened her eyes at the sound, immediately finding his, as though the universe had connected them with a string. She did not start at his presence, as one might expect, finding a man of his size at one's bedside. Instead, she smiled, soft and full of sleep, and Alec warmed with wicked pleasure. "You are home," she waited for him.
"How did you find me?"
The smile widened. "You are not the only one with access to Settlesworth, Your Grace." She looked to the table several feet away, hosting a porcelain animal tea party. "I would not have thought this would be quite your aesthetic, though. He might have laughed if he did not want her so much, if he were not so broken by her presence."
"Why are you here, Lily?"
She blinked, and he loathed himself for the doubt that flashed in her gaze. She stopped, took a deep breath, met his gaze with renewed certainty. "I came for you." His knees weakened, but he resisted the urge to go to her, to touch her, to give in to his desire, somehow. Instead, he said,
"My mother was English."
A pause, then, "as was mine." He ignored the reply, edged with humour, her eyes glittering and making him want her more than ever before as she threatened to laugh, as she tempted him more than he'd ever dreamed possible.
"She was beautiful. My father was wild over her, allegedly."
"Allegedly?"
"By the time I arrived, neither cared for the other. They lived in Scotland, in the Highlands, and he worked the family distillery. She thought he was wealthy and landed, and he was, but the business, the estate that came with it was not run by another. It was run by stewards, had been for generations. He was a man who harvested wheat and sheared sheep and tarred roofs and mucked stalls, and she loathed it."
She sat up as he spoke, the Stuart plaid wrapped about her, auburn hair down around her shoulders, and he resisted the urge to drink her in, focused on the tale, once cautionary, now prophetic.
"She was not made for Scotland, my father would say. She was too perfect, slender like a reed, but unbendable. She could not bear the cold, the wet, the wild. We moved south to the border, to another estate owned by the family. And my father thought the proximity to England would change her, would return the girl he'd once loved."
"That is not how it works." She clutched the plaid to her breast, the fabric tempting him with little glimpses of shadow.
"You told me once that love is a powerful promise."
"And it was."
"My father learned that firsthand, as did I."
Her eyes widened, and he loathed the sadness there. "What happened?"
"She left us."
Lily's lips opened in a little silent inhale. "When?" He wanted to touch her more than he wanted to breathe, but this story, this prophetic tale, required telling.
"When I consider it, she left our hearts long before she left us, in truth. I cannot remember a time when she was happy."
She did not look away from him. "Not even with you?"
"Especially not with me. I was all Scots, too big, too coarse. I would come in from the fields and she would shake her head in disappointment and say, to herself as much as to me, 'Nothing about you fits.'"
Her brows were stitched together. "What does that mean? Fits where?"
"Here,"
he whispered, the word harsh with memory.
"The afternoon at the park, when you told me that you hadn't received a birthday gift since you were a child."
She tilted her head in silent question.
"I think you had the best of the possible scenarios. I doubt my mother ever even knew it was my birthday."
What a ridiculous thing to remember. He was a grown man, 34, and thinking on his childhood birthdays as though they mattered. He cleared his throat, tried for calm.
"She ran, eventually. She'd been sick for months, consumption, and she was convinced that it was Scotland that was doing it, killing her."
He looked away.
"I often wonder if she thought it was me."
"She didn't," Lily said, and he could not help himself from looking at her, from meeting her grey eyes and drinking in the certainty in them. "It was not you." And for a fleeting moment, he wondered what might have become of him if he'd had Lily then, when his whole world had crashed down around him. She might have saved him, might have loved him, might have borne him a line of beautiful little girls, red-haired and perfect, who would have worn the little clothes she'd sewn and mended his heart. Instead,
she died not 2 weeks after she returned to England.
Lily gasped his name and reached for him, but he stepped out of her reach, not trusting himself in the wake of her touch. You did not kill her.
I know, he said, but neither did I save her.
She shook her head. You cannot save us all.
The moment I was old enough, I fled as well. For England, for school. My father...
He stopped. What of him? She asked, her gaze falling to his hand, where the scar reminded him of his father every day. And then she was watching him, more beautiful than a woman should be.
When I was in school, they made us learn the myths.
Her brow furrowed in beautiful confusion, but he did not give her time to reply.
We were required to translate them from the Greek, and every boy in the course loathed the project. King did all he could to get out of it. He paid me to do the work for him on more than one occasion.
She smiled, turning on her side, sending the plaid sliding against her, a whisper of wool on skin. You did not attempt to escape your studies?
I did not have the luxury of it.
She nodded. Not yet a duke. The Scottish brute. He shook his head, watching as the fabric clung to the swell of her hip, to the curve of her breast.
Do you know about Selene?
She smiled, small and sweet. I have a sister named for her. She was goddess of the moon. He nodded.
She was also sister to the sun and the dawn, the daughter of Titans and a beauty beyond words. She was a scandalous child, the one who was changeable and unsettling. She could move the tides and light the heavens and provide cover for the nefarious deeds of the world if she wished. The sun came every day, as did the dusk, but the moon, it was like joy, purposeful and inconstant. She was queen of the night.
Lily watched him with rapt attention, and his fingers itched to touch her, but still he kept himself from her.
One night, as she moved across the sky, her light touched on a sleeping shepherd.
Endymion, Lily said, the name a rapt whisper. He nodded.
It was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen, peaceful and good.